Do you remember the winter of 22? The pediatric intensive care units were full of babies and small children who could barely breathe. This was because the measures taken to combat the coronavirus pandemic in the past two winters meant that many children had not yet suffered their first RSV infection. As a result, there were many children who became ill and therefore, more than usual, were seriously ill. An example of how quickly pathogens can spread. And this is precisely the expertise of Dr. Berit Lange, acting head of the Department of Epidemiology and head of the Clinical Epidemiology Research Group here at the Helmholtz Center for Infection Research. In this episode of Infect, our host Julia Demann talks to Berit Lange about how we can prepare ourselves for when the next pandemic will pose new challenges to our personal health and the healthcare system, our society and politics. Pandemic resilience.
I'm sitting here in the library of the HZI with the epidemiologist Dr. Berit Lange. Hi, Berit.
Hi, Julia.
I think many of us still have the corona pandemic in mind. What about you?
I still have it very much in mind, yes.
After the pandemic is before the pandemic. What about pandemic resilience? What does that actually mean?
So pandemic resilience is just a term to make clear that in a society, you need to set up your infrastructures and all of the structures that you have in a way so that you are able to manage epidemic developments that are happening and to target interventions that you want to use in a way that they are not as harmful as they might be.
So you are a physician and an epidemiologist. What exactly is your field of research and which tasks do you have here at the HZI?
So as you say, I both have clinical experience in infectious diseases and I'm also an epidemiologist. And my research group focuses on the dynamic and the burden of respiratory infections. And we do that by doing evidence synthesis, so meta-analysis of ongoing research. We also use large epidemiological studies, both population-based but also clinical studies to understand how infections actually spread, what underdetection you currently have, how infection fatality might be, and also to understand the effects that both pharmaceutical but also non-pharmaceutical interventions might have. And then we also develop dynamic models that are able to predict but also analyze the spread of infections.
You mentioned population-based or clinical cohorts. What is that and why exactly is it important for us?
So in our department, we are managing and leading and conducting several large population-based studies. And we call studies population-based when we try to go as close to the actual makeup of the population that we have, for example, here in Germany. The way we do that in Germany, for example, is that we have population registers that lie with the individual city. And we, after having all the ethical and data protection approvals, we are allowed to get data from these registers, random data basically from these registers, and then approach these people to please be part of our study. And what that means is that even though people, of course, still take part voluntarily, we then have studies that are as close as you can be to the population, for example, of Hanover or of Germany or of even larger regions. And then what you can do is in these populations, you can actually follow people to understand how diseases are developing, but then also how interventions work on these diseases. And we, of course, here at the HZI, we do that mainly for infectious diseases.
And I think there are two cohorts studies which are important here for you. What is this?
So we have several. I have two main examples. Yes. And yes, you are totally right. So one is the NARCO study. This is basically the largest population-based study there is in Germany. It is a study that works in, or that is conducted in 18 centers across Germany. And we are managing one of these centers in Hanover. Overall, it has recruited 200,000 participants. And this is really a study that is not only meant to understand infectious diseases, but also chronic diseases, and really tries to go very, understand participants' journey, let's say, across a large number of years in very, very much detail. And then we have a second, a bit smaller cohort that we are managing from the HZI, which is the MoosePAT cohort that we built up during the pandemic, basically as a seroprevalence study to understand what under-detection and infection fatality of SARS-CoV-2 is. It works, it has around 34,000 participants in 8 regions in Germany. And we noticed even during the pandemic that this was a cohort that works really well. We are very grateful to participants to give us blood, to give us information, to fill out questionnaires. But we were not, because we had to build it up when the pandemic started, we were not really able to give the results, the parameter you need, really in a timely manner, for example, for modeling that is then needed by decision makers. And this is why during the last 2 years, we have redesigned this cohort into something that we now call an epidemic panel. And this is really meant to be adaptive to any pathogen that might come in, to be as rapid as you can be. So we really try to be able to start any surveys that we want to start within weeks, and to be really able to give out continuous reporting of the estimates that we find. So, for example, over this winter for this cohort, we have given out weekly estimates of positivity for RSV, influenza, SARS-CoV-2 in the population, just continuously over the last 12 weeks or so.
So you told me now what you do, but how exactly does your work life look like? How does an epidemiology department work?
So as I've already said, so we are quite a big epidemiology department. We have 4 research groups. We have a research group that is based in the laboratory, so we also have laboratory work, and these colleagues are mainly developing diagnostic assays that we then use in our population-based or other studies. We also have research groups, too, actually, that are very focused on building and developing and then evaluating digital tools in both that we can use in, for example, the studies that I just mentioned that work on the mobiles of participants, for example, but also in infectious disease surveillance across the world. This is, for example, the SORMAS tool that has been rolled out across different countries. And we then have research ongoing that is very based on, say, statistical analysis, on modeling, that, of course, works a lot in front of the computer. So what we have in the department is a very hybrid way of working. We really try to have larger meetings where everyone is there. We try to have presence days where everyone is there. But we still have also a lot of virtual meetings, and so it works kind of in both ways. And then the fifth thing we have is we also have, of course, the study center where our participants are seen in Hanover, not in Braunschweig. And this is then, of course, something which also only works in presence with quite a good center.
So you do not just do research and you're leading a research department. You're also do some, let's say, political activities, research political activities. And when I hear all that, it sounds like, you're a machine that works day and night, but you're a human being. I can see that if you're sitting in front of me. So yes, you have to eat, to sleep, and you need like some balance in life. What's important to you in your private life?
So I think balance is not so difficult for me because I have a family, I have 2 kids, and those immediately provide balance when you come home, because then other things are important, of course. And so as a family, what we like to do is we like to travel and we like to take trains a lot. So we don't have a car. We only go with trains to everywhere. Sometimes we even do Interrail. And this is something that I like a lot.
So you said you're also a mother, and I think you're a good example for combining children and career. How do you manage that with your work here at the Edge.ai?
So the Edge.ai is quite supportive in that. So for example, not only me, but also the other colleagues who are leading research groups in my department, they also have care and family responsibilities, and not all of them work full-time, and that is something that is possible and that we manage within the department, but that is also supported by the Edge.ai, and I think that is a really good thing. And of course, on the question of how do you manage that personally, everyone will have a different answer, but a lot of it is just trying to manage your time as best as you can together with your partner, but also having a lot of help and support by my family, my wider family as well.
Thank you for your time and the interesting facts of your research and the insights into the research of an epidemiologist.
Thank you so much.